I'm genuinely honoured to welcome our first Knight of the Realm onto the show, Sir Stirling Moss, OBE. So, Stirling, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining in with us here today.
It's a pleasure. I'd rather be inside than out at the moment.
Yeah, it's a bit chilly out there.
Yes.
We were travelling in a car a few weeks ago down to Aldershot to do a bit of filming, and you mentioned that you currently drive a Renault Twizy, which may surprise a lot of people. I was curious, what does your car history look like? What sort of cars have you owned over the years?
Well, it depends what I've needed. I mean, when I was racing, in my racing time, which was about 60 years ago, I had a Fassel Vega, which was a 6-litre Chrysler engine in this really fantastic car. Obviously, it was extravagant, but that didn't matter then, because petrol, you know, was pretty cheap. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I used everywhere. And then later on, I got a Mini, because, they, you know, being in the centre of town. And I had had that quite a while. And now, of course, I've got the Renault.
As I said, it may surprise a lot of people that you do drive a small electric car, but it makes a lot of sense living in the centre of London.
Well, before I did that, actually, I used to ride a scooter all the time.
Right.
And, you know, and fell off a couple of times. And so everybody was quite pleased here. You know, that you're doing something a bit safer. But the Twizy's idea, I mean, if you live in the middle of a big city, or, you know, because our range is only, what, about 40 miles, but that's plenty, you know, for normal runs as I go off. But if I want to go any further, I mean, for instance, I'll get on the train if it's going north and do some work on the way.
Or do you jump in Lady Moss's Aston?
Yeah, exactly.
Is it true that you've never passed your driving test?
I've never taken the test, because I got my first driving licence in about 1945, I think.
So that was before the requirement for a test?
Yeah, exactly, before that requirement came in.
Thinking about the fact that you drive the Twizy, and when we were talking, you mentioned that you've invested in Tesla Motors. How do you envisage the passenger car evolving in the future?
Well, I'm sure it'll go electric. I think it's going to be obvious. There's so many benefits. Because now, of course, you get enormous performance out of electric vehicles.
Indeed.
And, of course, the silence and all the other benefits. I frankly feel, you know, it's obviously there's going to be a lot more electricity used.
Yeah, very much so. You see a lot of the manufacturers moving into that space now.
Yeah, exactly.
Thinking back to the beginning of your career, how did you actually manage to get into racing? What was the catalyst that got you behind the wheel?
Well, my father raced before the war, obviously. He raced in Indianapolis and in Brooklyn and so on and so forth. So I was brought up with fast cars and not driving them, obviously, from a very early age. But I was brought up with them. And so, you know, I started driving on the farm when I was about 5 or 6. And, you know, I could go, we had about a 15-acre farm, and so I could drive. And I was a fairly competent driver by the time, you know, my licence arrived.
What would you say is your favourite racing car of all time?
The best car, there's no doubt, if you're talking sports cars, is a 300 SLR Mercedes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is certainly the finest car I've ever built. But if you're talking about doing the pleasure of driving, I suppose a 250F Maserati would be pretty high on the list.
Yeah, amazing looking machines.
Yeah.
Talking about the SLR there, last year you celebrated the 60th anniversary of your famous win at the Mille Miglia.
Yeah.
Now, I've been researching this a little bit because I know that you've been coming on the show, and those figures are still staggering today.
It's
incredible.
Actually,
what's your, you know, standout moments? What's your recollection of that actual race? What do you think of when you think back to that period?
I just think, you know, Italy is the only place in the world that could do it. I mean, the roads weren't closed. People kept off them because they were interested in watching, but they weren't closed. And trucks and refrigerated vehicles and so on, you know, all had to keep going. But they did obviously keep their eye in the rear view mirror.
Uh-huh.
And you see, there were about just 600 cars took part in this event. You know, the first car went at 9 o'clock at night,
mm-hmm.
at half minute intervals up to midnight, and then they went at 1 minute intervals from there on. I was 7:22, and that was 7:22 in the morning, and of course it was light, which was terrific.
Yeah, and that's famously why your car had the 7:22 number on it.
Exactly.
Yeah. So for people that aren't aware of this was motor race that ran for 992 miles, so a 1,597 kilometer course, public roads. And you maintained what speed?
I think 97, 98 miles an hour average.
Average. So
I can remember very well overtaking twin-engined aircraft and things like that. You know, we were obviously filming, you know, and then I'd know where the road went because they'd veer off to the right, and I'd know we're going to go that way. But I had a chap with me called Dennis Jenkins, who was three times world champion in a sidecar. Mm-hmm. And because, you know, I wouldn't want to go with anybody, frankly, as sure. a passenger. But he just loved it. He was used to the thrill of speed and three wheels. Yeah. And so he was really. We devised this box. Well, I think actually John Fitch, I think, had the idea originally, because you couldn't. No way could I learn circuit.
Sure.
I mean, it took 2 days to do one lap. And you know, so no way would. But we made this roll, which we called a toilet roll, mm-hmm. and on there were all the things that one needed to know, like if you're going into a town, whether it's flat out or whether you have got a brake for a right or left turn, all these things he fed to me by hand signals.
Absolutely incredible. So going over the essential statistics of that was 992-mile race, 10 hours, 7 minutes, 48 seconds, an average of 97 to 98 miles an hour on a public road, and you managed to finish 32 minutes ahead of your teammate Juan Manuel Fangio?
Ben, yes. Yeah, I thought it was a bit more than that, but anyway, yes, it was certainly Fangio, because Fangio, no way could I beat Fangio in a Formula One car for whatever reason, and I could usually beat him in sports car races. So
did that upset him?
No, he was very gracious about it. Let's put it that way. But as we couldn't speak, I mean, we needed an interpreter because mm-hmm. I don't speak Spanish or whatever they sure. speak down there, and he certainly didn't learn English or French or anything else. So mainly it was hand signals.
What you were saying there about Dennis Jenkinson, that system that you both developed is still used as the standard for international rally today.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it was the first pace notes, and very good pace notes, I'll tell you.
So you managed to innovate while travelling at 98 miles an hour for an average of 10 hours.
Yeah.
Quite an achievement. If you hadn't been a racing driver, what do you think you'd have done instead?
Well, if I could have done, I should have become a dentist, because my father was a dentist, and he had 16 different surgeries around London. And so it was always thought, well, you know, I'll just go take over the business. But unfortunately, to qualify for dentistry, you had to do your DDS or whatever the thing was, and I was unable to do that. I mean, I wasn't that bright at school, and so here I was with all this layout ready waiting for me to take over from Dad, and I couldn't do it. So really, I was forced to find an alternative, which I'm glad I did, because that gave me the opportunity of racing. Mm-hmm. I know my father said to me, I said to him, I want to do a race, and he said, look, if you're going to, you've got to wear a crash hat. And I remember saying to him, oh, Dad, that's a bit sissy. You know, the fast drivers, people like Emil and Barty and everybody, always wore those soft things, you know, like a flying helmet.
You must be mesmerised by the technology that goes into current racing cars and safety.
Absolutely staggering. But, you know, I'm glad I raced when I did. I far prefer that than now, actually, I think. I think we had a lot more fun. There's less people getting on your back, PR people, to do this, that, and the other. And it wouldn't work out nearly as well now.
Again, researching this, and I watched a video on YouTube with you and Lewis Hamilton when you were talking about the fact that you had no seatbelts because you needed to get out the car quickly.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I was racing every single, I was doing 50 races a year, which is about as much as I could put in.
Sure.
And so I drive all types of, I drive 108 different cars.
Right.
And, you know, it was my whole lifetime, really.
You famously drove for Ferrari on 14 occasions, winning 12 of the races that you entered.
Yeah, yep. But I had a row with Ferrari, and he upset him. You know, he asked me to drive a car for him. I went all the way down to Bari in southern Italy to find it was being given to Taruffi. And so I got rather teed off and vowed I wouldn't race for Ferrari, which I didn't do. But just before my final crash, he called me up and asked me to go down there to Italy and said, would I drive for him? And I agreed. And then, of course, I had a big crash at Goodwood, so it didn't happen.
That takes me on to that crash. What was the recovery period like after that? Or what do you remember of the actual incident, the actual crash?
Well, I was unconscious for a month and paralyzed down one side for 6 months. And so I don't really... The last thing I remember was a friend of mine who is a paraplegic guy, you know, he's in an iron lung, and I got him passes to come to the race down in Goodwood. And that's the last thing I sort of remember. And then when I woke up a month later, and there were a lot of flowers in the room, and I said, you know, well, what's all these flowers? Who's died? I hadn't realised I'd been very near to it myself.
Yeah, absolutely. So since that event, this is obviously a long time ago now, what do you do to occupy your time? What's your main daily activities? What do you do?
Sell my time, basically. somebody wants me to open a garage or something. See, what the good news from my point of view is the modern drivers earn so much money, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, 30 million a year or something ridiculous, that they're too expensive.
Sure.
And so if they want somebody to be at an opening or whatever, I do a lot of that. I write, contribute odd things to certain magazines, and I do anything really that comes along. I'm sort of international prostitute, really, and I'm available if you need my services.
We'll promote you for that.
Yeah.
But speaking about the modern era of drivers, what are you looking forward to most in the next F1 season? Who's your money on?
Vettel.
Vettel.
I think Vettel is the fastest driver. I think that Lewis is right up there with him. I mean, Lewis is no slouch. Mm. He's obviously got the best car. The Mercedes is fantastic. I mean, Mercedes was the best car when I was driving in 55, and certainly they've come forward the same way, and which is, you know, that's what makes it more exciting. There are quite a few drivers out there who are very, very quick.
Yeah.
Very quick.
From the current crop of drivers, who would you say emulates the style of driving that you had?
I'd like to think it was Vettel, because I'm a great fan of his.
Sure.
And I think he's fairly relaxed in it and that sort of thing. But
you mentioned the accident there as well. You also had an accident more recently. Could you share that with us?
Which one? I had a lot of accidents. Which one are you talking about?
I was thinking more about falling down the lift shaft in your house.
Ah, yes, yeah, well, that was a malfunction, you see. I mean, the door shouldn't have opened, and, sure. and something had gone wrong. And, you know, when you open the door, you step into it, yep. you step through it. And I stepped through it, but there was nothing to step onto. And so I went down, you know, 3 stories. And, of course, it was not good news. And I got up my ankles and everything else. But, you know, that's what happens.
You seem to be invincible.
Well, I don't know. I could use it for quite a lot of my 9 lives, I'll tell you that.
That's amazing. You're also very active in your charity work. What motivates you to help other people?
Yes, well, I do quite a lot of charity things because I have good friends who are supporting these things, and so I go along and you know, make appearances and that sort of stuff, yes.
Yeah, this is very commendable. And you were knighted in the year 2000 by Prince Charles?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
What do you remember of that day? What stands out for you on that
occasion?
Well,
the pomp and circumstance is fantastic. I mean, I remember going there and thinking, boy, the Americans couldn't copy this. No way could you have a place like... I mean, I don't know if you've been in Buckhouse.
No.
It's a pretty impressive place, I'll tell you. right in the best part of London, you know. And going in there and then the trumpets go and, you know, all this sort of stuff, and then you go down and Prince Charles got the old sword and tapped me on the shoulder, and he said it's been a long time coming. I said, well, so I guess just as well, he said, because otherwise it would have gone with the wrong wife.
Project 46 is essentially your house and what yeah, you have yeah. invested in the technology inside it. When did that start? When did you think, I'm going to make this place a showcase for technology?
Oh, well, more or less when I started, actually, obviously, because I've always been interested in those things. My father, actually, was a dentist, but he was very keen on gadgets and all those sort of things. And in fact, he's the person who invented and made the Morrison Shelter.
Oh.
what you put over your, if you had a place in the countryside or wherever, you had either an Anderson shelter, which was out in the garden,
yeah.
or you had the what was called the Morrison shelter, should have been the Moss shelter, where we literally stayed in bed and, you know, during this, you know, all through the war.
Wow, incredible.
I mean, you know, we would hear the sirens go, you're too young, but the sirens would whoop and everybody else would jump out of bed and go to their Anderson shelter, whereas we were lucky enough we could just stay in bed and say, solid.
And be safe from the war effort that's going on outside.
Yeah, other than a direct hit, of course, yes.
Yeah, exactly that.
You know, I can actually remember when television sets, when if you had one of the most up-to-date television sets, it means you had a cable from where you sat across to where the set was, and that was pretty modern. Well, of course, nowadays you can change every one of them from any place you like, anyway.
Indeed.
So things do change, and that's the benefit. I mean, in motor racing, the benefit of motor racing, or one of the big benefits, of course, is to, you know, make cars safer.
Yeah, very much.
I mean, what
so.
You've got to realise is now every car in the world, I think, has disc brakes.
Mm-hmm.
We were developing those in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it takes a long time for these to be fully tested and approved and all that.
So, look, just before we wrap things up, what's your abiding memory of your career? What's your greatest achievement, would you say, from the years that you were racing?
I think, well, either my Melee, I think, was a pretty, pretty satisfactory race. And also Monaco in 61, which was then 100 laps, and I managed to win actually at a speed that was slightly greater for the whole race than pole position that I got in practice, which was very helpful.
And just before we go again, I watched the hill climb at Goodwood when you drove the SLR up the hill. What did that feel like to get back behind the wheel?
Oh, it's always lovely to get behind the wheel, particularly with all races. There are some not good racing cars, but you know, they all have their own character, and you know, getting in and driving them is fantastic. I mean, the cars, obviously, the later cars were far more developed, but not necessarily more fun.
Yeah,
I mean, 55 was, from my point of view, a great year because I was racing for Mercedes.
So, Stirling, I'm a huge fan. I'm really privileged that you've come on the show, and I'd like to thank you very, very much for your time today.
Well, thank you very much for calling. You're talking about my favourite subject.
Yourself. Fantastic. Fantastic.
That's very sweet of you. Thanks a lot.
Excellent. Thanks again. Goodbye, Sir Stirling.
Cheerio. Goodbye.
Thank you.
Cheerio.